two recorders, just like Tom.
No, yeah, I always record it.
Always,
double,
always,
at
always
least double.
Double. Yeah.
So, what kind of phone do you have?
Hmm?
What kind of phone do you have?
I've been using this.
No, I mean, do you have a phone that has
it? Like, do you use your iPhone a lot?
Yeah, I always use my iPhone as my main backup.
Oh, okay.
Because I always have it, and and sometimes, there was Tony and Joan called me during a Caro town board meeting that they were recording, that their batteries were running out, and I showed up with my phone and recorded the second half, and we made the two files together, and I thought the second half sounded better than the first half.
Oh, that's cool.
But it could be just where we were standing or whatever, but they're pretty good now with recording quality.
Cool.
So those are our levels. Yes. All right, here.
Check.
Oh, the headphones are turned down. Okay.
Check. Yeah, okay. Cool.
So that's way loud. Yeah, that's plenty loud. Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, so you have no questions for me, so we're just going to get started.
Yeah, maybe I'll do, if I have questions for you, I'll do that at the end.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so you're Tom Rowe. Your age-ish?
Oh, I'm 44.
44. Your gender?
Male, yes.
It's a tricky question sometimes. Occupation?
I don't know what I list on my tax. You have to list that on your taxes?
I'm not going to be checking.
I don't know, artist taxes. Or journalist or something, like combination
artist,
or something.
Artist and journalist?
Is perhaps.
Artist and journalist. So what role did you play in sharing information during Irene?
Well, I was the person in mostly posting on the WGXC newsroom blog, which is read on the air by announcers for the newscasts. So we were just trying to get, I guess, coordinating as much public information at that point in the first days, I guess, because it was all emergency breaking public information that needed to be shared with as many people as possible. So I don't know if that's the answer to your question or.
It's a start, yeah. It's a good place to start. So for you, when did you first get concerned about Irene?
We knew about it the week before. We had, I can't remember his name now, the chief guy from the Greene County Emergency Management Team on Friday afternoon on the afternoon show, and I interviewed him about what preparation Greene County was doing before the storm.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave specific recommendations for what people should specifically do in front of the storm or during the storm, and it was kind of also, I guess, reassuring the public that they were planning for it, and I guess mainly wanting really the public to take it seriously, because I don't think the word hurricane in the Catskills has much meaning as it does in Florida or Houston or somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So there was a concern that maybe people weren't taking it seriously enough. Where did that concern come from, or what led you to have that concern?
I don't know if there was any specific fact. I just think this area is not known for being hit by hurricanes or being affected by hurricanes. And so, I lived in Florida, so I knew what they could be like. And it seemed like, yes, this could be it's going to weaken and only be a tropical storm by the time it gets here, but that could still cause a lot of problems. I don't think anybody at the time, I didn't hear anybody talk about before the storm that the ground was super saturated, because that was true at the time, that we'd had lots of rain all month and the ground was super saturated. And that should have led people to think, wow, there can be some serious problems. They're going to drop, if the storm's going to drop this much rain on land that can't take any more rain, that could be a problem. And mm-hmm. I don't think anybody said that beforehand.
So you think that people kind of figured that out after the fact, that that was going to be an issue?
It was definitely talked about by several different officials afterwards. And it's now, I think, common wisdom about the storm. But nobody, I don't remember anybody talking about it beforehand. And there was very little talk about it, the storm beforehand. I think it was unusual that we had on the radio this interview with this emergency team in advance of the storm. I think maybe the newspaper had an advanced story, the same kind of thing, just saying what the emergency teams were preparing for and what time they were going in. But I don't remember it may not have been a story in the newspaper. I don't remember much other media about the storm in advance warning people.
And when you say the newspaper, which one are you referring to?
The Daily Mail or the Register Star? Yeah, the Hudson Catskill newspapers group. And I hadn't. I definitely, there was no other media that, maybe the Watershed Post had mentioned something beforehand, but, well, the Daily Freeman could have had something. I don't remember. I just don't remember much, build up to the storm. As you know, often the winter storms come in and there's like 3 days of crazy, weather predictions, and then it either happens or it doesn't. This didn't seem like that. I don't remember. I don't think.
Okay. So do you think that it might have been your past experience with hurricanes that kind of drove the GXC to do some pre coverage?
Perhaps. I think the mission around the station has always been about public service information, and that the most important times for the radio station would be times of emergency. So I think we've taken storms seriously and crises, I guess, seriously, as it's the best thing radio can do is provide immediate information. So I think we've always been, since we started the station, looking for moments when the station could have the most impact because it was the most useful. When the electricity starts to go out and people only have a battery-powered radio, then the station becomes much more important in the community.
Mm-hmm. So then during, and that was actually one of the first things that happened pretty early on in the emergency. The station lost power, right?
Yeah, we should go through hour by hour. And the storm started on Saturday night, is that right?
The storm started on, it started raining on Saturday afternoon.
So I remember
my house was flooding on Sunday at 7 in the morning.
Right, so I remember being in Hudson on Saturday for some reason. And I remember driving over the Rip Van Winkle Bridge before it got dark. And the electricity had gone out in Catskill. The storm, it would just maybe was sprinkling at the most. Like, we were doing weather warnings on Hudson. Uh-huh. Yeah, we were doing hourly like weather warnings during the day. And I remember driving home and like the electricity is already out in Catskill. And it was some coincidence. I don't think it was storm related at all. But some breaker blew or something. And the street lights were out in Catskill already. There was very little traffic because I think at that point in Saturday afternoon, people were taking it seriously. There had been a proper buildup on Saturday and the streets seemed very empty and nobody was out. People were already going to wherever they were or gotten to where they were in. And I got home probably around dark or near 7 or 8 or when it was getting dark. And it started basically raining from that point on, I think. And so I think we were on the air all night. And I think it was just basically me giving out, as much reports as possible from here, we weren't here in this building yet. We were in our basement. And I think it was basically me giving out reports with basically a laptop and a little mixer like this. And, like just one microphone probably. And, just looking up stuff online. And then, I think I fell asleep at like 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning. I think I remember staying up late and trying to do as much as I could. And then I was woken up by, I think, the electricity going out and we got knocked off the air at like 7:50 or 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we don't have a backup generator.
Yeah. So you said that, that one of the big motivations for the station was to be able to provide coverage in these kind of emergencies. So why don't you have a backup drum narrator?
Just because it's $15,000 and to buy the one that we have to for our space and needs and per regulations, and mm-hmm. so we don't have $15,000.
Okay. So is that something that you guys plan to do, or?
We're hoping that our radio council, one of the things we've trying to present to them as a pressing need that they could work on. I think there's been 3 times in the past 2 weeks that we've been off the air for an hour or two during an electrical storm, when the power got knocked out at our transmitter site.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like that power goes out, there's a lot of storm-related power outages?
How often in the summer happen? Electrical storms, it's been more common than the winter snowstorms, but those are the two storms that generally knock us off the air.
How many times has that happened?
It definitely has been 3 times in the past 10 days that we've been out for 4 times. We were out for 5 minutes once. 5 minutes, I think, a couple hours. There was like 6 or 8 hour stretch one day and a 4 hour stretch another day, I think.
Mm-hmm. And those were all weather related?
All the electricity going out in the neighborhood around our transmitter site, yeah.
So those sounds like exactly the moments when you'd want to be on the air.
The most, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So that sounds like it was a hold up, but What do you feel like you were? Do you have any sense of what you were able to accomplish in terms of getting information out to the public? What did you? What were you able to do at that point? Even though you were off the air for how long was you off the air for? The first 2 days.
We went out Sunday morning, and I think we came back. Yes, I know. We definitely came back on Tuesday, at around noon or 1 o'clock. Because I remember immediately saying, okay, one of us should, it was like me and Sarah and like, okay, we were there at the station and I wanted to leave. I said, okay, one of us needs to go and start driving around and calling in with reports from Wyndham and Prattsville. And we were basically arguing. She's like, she wanted me to stay to help her. And I'm like, well, we need to have somebody out somewhere. And at that moment, I think Paul Smart called in and said he was driving to all these places mm-hmm. at the moment. So I didn't have to leave. And he called in from Prattsville. He didn't get to Prattsville. He got as close as he could get into Wyndham. He could get into he called from Hunter and Tannersville, but he couldn't get into Prattsville. I don't think, and maybe he called from Ashland. Like he went around back mm-hmm. or something. But those recordings are definitely up on the website, mm-hmm. I believe still. Or we definitely have access to those recordings. But that would be the beginning. So that the web stream was still going, and we started it Monday. We didn't do too much because we were just like trying to get things fixed and figuring out what we could do to get back on the air. And then Tuesday we basically just started, okay, we'll be back soon, and started doing it on the web stream. And then we were live at like noon or one or something. And basically it was Sarah and I just reading whatever information we could find or got sent to us, or we called people for. We started doing interviews with, getting phone calls and taking phone calls and just putting as much public information out as we could. During that the first period, what we were doing, we started. Basically, when the electricity went out the morning, that's when everything started, and that's what I think you want to talk about is the social media began organically at that point.
Yeah, so that's what exactly. So we have for your particular timeline for the station, there's sort of like a pre-storm phase, right?
Yeah. I don't know. We should go back to the pre-storm phase because I'm remembering something else about the pre-storm phases. Mm-hmm. The Watershed Post started their live it's called, I can't remember what it's called, the word.
Live blog.
They started the live blog, I think maybe Friday afternoon or Saturday. Definitely by Saturday morning it was up and running, and we were participating in that.
Uh-huh.
So they had picked up our Twitter feed and all these other Twitter feeds from around the area, and the Daily Freeman, Ivan, was heavily involved in getting a lot of stuff organized. Then that's where Andrea emerged from that process.
Mm-hmm.
She started as an independent person, just contributing to that live blog.
Right.
And there were other people.
You remember her from that?
I remember her totally. That's what the only reason I know her is from that time.
So before the storm even hit, the Watershed Post had the live blog on, and they were capturing the WGXC Twitter feed, among others. And you guys,
and I was typing it directly into the live blog, as well as them just picking up mostly we were typing into our own Twitter feed, so that our own listeners got that information, but we knew it was also going to there too. But they were raising questions, like people would raise specific questions about certain areas. There was all these rumors about the dam in the Schoharie Dam, whether it was about to go or if it already gone or what. So there were all kinds of, a couple days later, the best thing about the live blog, the Watershed Post, they said was it was best rumor patrol, because if something was not true, somebody would shoot it down within an hour. Somebody would like, no, that's not, that's, a couple days later, there was a fraudulent donation request that was put up there and that had been going around to a lot of circles, and they quashed that right away. That was almost what the best figuring out what information was true or not, because because of the social media aspect that it just started organically that morning. The Watershed Post live blog had gone up, and that was mostly the dedicated folks. I don't think Andrea was involved on that Saturday, probably. Mm-hmm. She was probably got involved on that Sunday morning when her power went out and she still had internet, or maybe she still had her power, but that Sunday morning was really what galvanized a lot of people to participate that probably had never participated in media in that way before.
That was because you were on the blog, so you got up on Sunday morning after you'd been up from 4 at 7 or something, and you got on, you start looking to see what you can do. You still had internet here. Were you doing Twitter through your phone or through the internet?
Well, both, yeah.
Okay.
I always do Twitter through my phone and through the computer too.
So pretty quickly you get on there and you realize that there's a lot of action on the live blog, and you are contributing to that. You and Sarah through WGXC are contributing to the live blog, taking that information, reposting it to the people that are following GXC's Twitter. And then a couple of days later on Tuesday, you start adding the web streaming,
and then the FM by the midday. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then when the FM came back, then we were at full stream and basically, it's kind of a blur, but the next couple of days, that's all we did. Shows got, interrupted and, I think we had to take a break from it sometimes. And I think we also felt too that music shows were kind of important, and that the community kind of needed these moments where it wasn't like 100% of the time being bombarded with this crazy negative information.
Mm-hmm.
And we did start getting calls from people. I remember we got a call from somebody in Preston Hollow who said their power had been out for a week and they'd only had radio to listen to, and they'd been listening to us like nonstop. And we started getting calls like that because.
Do you think you could track down that person?
I don't think we can track down that person. No, I have no idea what the name was or anything, if it was documented at all.
You mentioned that there was people that sort of this. I think this is kind of interesting because you said you just said that there was people who. You've been a journalist. How long have you been involved in journalism now?
2019. I don't know. Let's see. 25 years or at least.
25 years. And you mentioned you've been talking about the Watership Post people. That's Lissa and Julia. They're also professional journalists, I think.
I don't know their background fully, so I'm not mm-hmm. sure, but I assume they are.
And so there is those kind of folks, but then also that are in the mix along with these people that you, your perception were participating in the live blog that were, you said maybe had never participated in something like that before. That was,
yeah, there were definitely just random people that, you know, who did whatever job and I'm sure did not consider themselves writers. I mean, there were people that were clearly farmers. There were people people were just helping as much as they could. And because they were reading the blog, it just, and the format it is, it just naturally, lends itself to participation. Like you see something and you're like, no, that's not really true. Or, oh no, I know something even wackier than that. Or I know the answer to that. Or mm-hmm. there's a question out there. Is this true? Or, and you know the information, and it only takes you, I think because of the computer age we're in, you're used to responding to things online, whether it's buying something or there's a give and take. So it's not that unusual to join that give and take, even though it would be unusual for the same person to call a radio station or call a television station or a newspaper with a mm-hmm. tip. That I don't think that happens nearly as often as it can now with the ease of computers.
Mm-hmm. So are there any particular people that stand out in your mind as participants in the group, or is there
in the live blog in particular?
Yeah.
So there was one gentleman that I'm sure Andrea and the Watershed Post that was like this GPS expert or guru and uh-huh. was setting up maps for them. So whenever like they were setting up better road closure maps than the state was, or what, you know, the state agencies like 511.com, they had quicker information because they were getting it from all these. So he was aggregating the information that was coming in and then mapping it into, and I have no idea what his name was or anything, but did you ever find, if you could find the, is the live blog up?
Yeah, the live blog is archived on their site. Now, did you guys mirror?
So I'll look at it while we talk.
Okay, and that sure sounds great. That's exactly why I wanted to do it with your computer here. So is there anyone else that really stands out for you?
Ivan from the Daily Freeman was, and it was great that he was involved because he was not someone who was just the first timer, but was from the mainstream media, you could mm-hmm. say, and from those corporate media that, you know, the Daily Freeman is owned by a company in Pennsylvania, I think, and they own many newspapers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes those situations, they don't want to interact with other media. They consider all other media rivals instead of, mm-hmm. and Ivan and the Freeman really worked in a collaborative fashion with a lot of people. And they have a really interactive, for mainstream newspaper, a really interactive website. They do lots of live video. So I'm very impressed with the Daily Freeman and he was a key, you know, figure just under Lissa and Julia on that mm-hmm. in those days.
So when you mentioned that there was work that you mentioned that the people were doing work, you said that whatever job, random people were stepping in to do whatever job. Can you kind of like break out what you mean by jobs in the what kind of jobs were people doing in this context?
I guess they were kind of following their areas of expertise, and like this GPS guy came in and was like, oh, there clearly was a need to help map out where what all this information means and needs, so he stepped in, and so everybody was like kind of naturally, I mean, mostly it was watching your neighborhood. Like somebody would post something about Greene County and I would chime in as soon as I could if I knew what was the answer. I would often have the best Cairo information among the group. Mm-hmm. So if a Cairo question came up, I would either know about it already, or maybe know who to call, or I could just get in the car and drive and see if, because in Kira there was the food, the army made it, that took over the town park and made it into a whole landing station. And so we used the WGXC infrastructure, kind of worked magically without us doing anything. Like Joan Geitz went down to that, the Kira town park without like anybody telling her or asking or anything, and just like went down there and got recordings of the first ice giveaway at, I think it was 11 a.m. on the Wednesday or Thursday. And I think Tony Fallon like maybe went out and got some recordings. Like there was a lot of different WGXC volunteers who like knew there was something going on in their neighborhood or right around them, and like it was easy for them to help get in. So I think that same kind of spirit went on everywhere, and it was real locational. The person who lived in Preston Hollow had the best information about that bridge that was knocked out there at 81 and 145, I think it is. And they somebody from Preston Hollow would post the information, and it would be trusted more than
So it sounds like there's really maybe two separate kinds of expertise. There's kind of like a domain expertise, like the GPS guy, or like Ivan had. Yes. and then there's also the
geographical
expertise. And so do you think that people, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but can you just how to say this without twisting? When you have somebody that has that, you said the Preston Hollow guy.
So it did start at Saturday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah.
Saturday 4 a.m.
4 p.m. 4 p.m. Yeah.
Live blog starts.
It looks like that's what it. Mm-hmm. So that was basically what I remembered. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I must not have done much that, and that afternoon when we were broadcasting from Hudson, we didn't interact with this. But when we got when I got back home, then I'm sure we were on this all night. Yeah.
So the geography, the question about sort of it, you're going to trust people, like had you met the Watershed Post ladies before? Like, did you know, had you actually met them or met Ivan before?
I still have not met Ivan, and I still have not met Julia and Lissa in person. I've talked to them on the phone. I don't know if I may not have talked to them on the phone at that point. I probably had not talked to them on the phone at that point. Mm-hmm. I probably have emailed with them. Oh, no, I definitely emailed with them. Yeah, they had a show on the station at that point.
Okay.
So they started producing their half-hour radio show in the months before that. Yeah, and that half-hour radio show is a key figure in this. It was Wednesdays at 3 o'clock. And the Wednesday at 3 o'clock show they did that first week is the show that Cuomo walked into the studio, because he was like in the area, and like people told him, you've got to go talk to the Watershed Post. And like
they were at the Hudson studio.
No, they were in that the Roxbury station. Okay. They were doing it live from the Roxbury station studio. They were doing it, I think, from their house, and then Cuomo was in Roxbury or vice versa or somewhere. But basically almost in 10 minutes, with only 10 minutes advance notice, they got Cuomo as a guest. Uh-huh. On this live show that was on our station, Roxbury station, at the same time, and it was just, they had, people had taken them on ATVs to get to this whatever studio or wherever they were doing the show from, and they had this whole story about driving through the backwoods in these ATVs and what they saw and what roads were out and what you have to listen to that show. It's I thought it was the best 30 minutes that's probably ever been on WGXC.
Was this the Wednesday after the storm?
The Wednesday after the storm, I believe.
Okay. So did that happen? So they had a show on WGXC. Was that like a one-shot deal?
No, it was a weekly Wednesday at 3 p.m.
So that was a regularly scheduled show that went through all of the other... Are they still doing it?
No, they gave it up. Roxbury made them do a time change or something, and then they were going to go to a different time. It was going to be Saturday mornings, and then they stopped as like too much work for them I think.
Okay. So okay. So they clearly had a relationship with WGXC then, if they were broadcasting on that.
Yeah. Okay. It looks like on there. It might be 852 is the first time I was looking. It looks like that's not probably my first, but at least 852, there is a WGXC. Oh, yeah, and look, Ivan is retweeting what WGXC said is about Philip. So Philip Grant had sent some audio. Philip Grant had made some audio on Saturday afternoon.
Right, so those are little audio warnings that are repeating the... I just listened to them. It. So yeah. he was repeating some of the emergency information and as audio files that were getting played on the stream.
Yes.
That's great. So the Freeman was... So Ivan at the Freeman was following you.
He's already on it, yeah.
Retweeting what GXC was doing and following you guys. You were... But Watershed Post clearly had a relationship with GXC before the storm, since they had their show was getting rebroadcast, simulcast.
Rebroadcast. It was live on Roxbury at 1 o'clock. That's right. It was live on Roxbury at 1 o'clock, mm-hmm. and then we would replay it at 3. But I think that Wednesday we replayed it live at 1 o'clock, mm-hmm. because we were like nonstop coverage. Okay. So it was probably at 1 o'clock. Yes.
Okay. So. So do you have any sense of, I mean, you're sort of using the forum as a source of information, and then you're also retweeting to the WGXC community, people that follow WGXC. So do you have any sense of prior to getting back on the air, you said it sounded like Tuesday you're back on the station, you're able to start web streaming, and then your phone calls are coming and you're answering phone calls and that sort of thing. Do you have any sense of who you might have been reaching through the GXC Twitter and website?
Well, we know who we can find out exactly who, but it's people that subscribe to or like the Free 103 Facebook page or subscribe to the WGXC Facebook page or the WGXC Twitter feed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's all. I mean, I can't, maybe it can tell when they signed up. So,
so I'm just wondering if you have any sense of who you were reaching as you're participating.
Well, if they're liking us on Facebook or liking our Facebook page and are subscribing to our Twitter feed, you have to guess that they're computer literate and, more, you know, maybe they have a phone, so I don't know if you can say much more about them other than, most of them are in our listening area, but not all. Mm-hmm. So
the majority of people that are signed up for your tweets and Facebook are people that are in the same, roughly the same as the listening area.
So theoretically, yeah.
In Columbia and Greene County.
As far as we know, yeah.
And there's a little bit maybe of spillover from what you could see, but it's pretty
one-on-one. Yeah, there's definitely some other Hudson Valley, you know, people that mm-hmm. nearby. And
right.
And likewise, like we subscribe to newspaper feeds from Schenectady and nearby and Western Massachusetts, just because sometimes they do stories about Eastern Columbia County or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In terms of a personal impact of Irene, did you have any personal impact? Do you feel like the storms had any personal
impact? Almost none. No, we had no property damage. Uh-huh. We were without power for, I think, less than a day.
In terms of impact of like people that you might be you're close to or in your inner circle, like how did any of them have any impact from that?
I don't think anybody that we knew super well got more people that like I met professionally through the radio station than people that were like close friends or anything.
And overall, what do you have you experienced things like this before?
Yeah, well, Florida going through hurricanes. Yeah, yes, I went to Florida a month ago with Echo to see her grandma, and it was the weekend that the hurricane was offshore all weekend, and we had a tornado like 10 miles down the road, and basically everybody sat around all day watching the weather warnings on TV and seeing if the tornado watches were coming towards us or not. So yes.
So yeah. And
do you know if, can you change the date? Is it only, I want to see other days than just the first day or?
I don't know.
Oh, here, there.
Yeah.
There.
So yeah. There's, I know that it's all archived in the,
yeah. So it's by
and
times.
Andrea was also nice enough to say that she'd let me see some of the back end stuff too. Some of their coordinating documents and stuff. It's pretty amazing. They're really super into open journalism.
The Gilboa Dam is spilling over. Prepare to evacuate.
Okay.
And that turned out not to be true.
Right. Okay.
And that's Lissa.
So that got, yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. Okay. So that's the biggest, because that was definitely the biggest rumor that I heard. That
was just so persistent. It was the biggest rumor, yeah.
So I'll have to ask her about that.
It looks like that was Sunday morning. I think is where I'm on. This is. Mm-hmm.
Sunday morning would have been the 28th, and that was the day. I know I started flooding at about 7:05 in the morning. It was at 7 o'clock we were not flooding, and at 7:05 we were. So, let's see here.
I just haven't looked at this in so long. It's crazy.
What's crazy about it?
I just don't remember. It was so intense. There's like someone just posted like you're not allowed to be on the streets in Ulster County unless it's an absolute emergency. You know, it's mm-hmm. like.
That was the next question I was going to ask is like, how does this compare to other events that you've covered?
Certainly up here, I've never seen anything like it up here. I mean, the snowstorms are the closest thing. And I don't think the snowstorms are ever as lasting or damaging or anything. The hurricanes are the only thing close to what I've ever seen. And it was a hurricane. Yeah, it seemed like a hurricane, a Florida hurricane.
Okay. So why did you decide to take this particular work? I mean, what motivated you to cover this story?
Well, I mean, the radio station, like I said before, is kind of set by its council and was one of the main important things is to provide vital emergency information. And I think journalists in general have a urge and need to want to do that in times when passing along information is as important as possible. The thing that probably a lot of broadcasters don't think about is that the airways are owned by the people. And so there's a responsibility as a sort of caretaker of one little frequency of the airwaves to for it to serve the public need, especially in the times when the public need is at the greatest.
Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to participate in the social media aspect?
I was just following the information. That was where the information was. There, you know, the Daily Mail, the Register Star, updates its paper at 2:08 a.m. and very rarely otherwise. Sometimes breaking stories, they'll update otherwise. So they probably updated a lot more during the storm, but they weren't updating every 5 minutes or every 10 minutes or 15 minutes. And we were doing updates on the air every 10 minutes or every 15 minutes, and we needed new information to give out. And we wanted new information because we wanted better information and the most complete and accurate information. Because, like you said, I'm sure we reported things on the air that were incorrect at points. You know, we may have reported that Gilboa Dam rumor because if I saw Alyssa reported it, it certainly would have seemed mm-hmm. More credible to me. So I think we were very much wanted to get as much from as many varied sources and one reporter can get so much information, but if there's 100 people living in different places, all typing into online, kind of fact checking each other at the same time. So you can verify things. That was the freshest, most important information.
Mm-hmm. So to you, even though they're like strangers and maybe they're not sources that you ever heard, if somebody said something and then three or four people come back and say, no, that's not true, that has some kind of credibility for you? Or
yeah, credit, you can, even just from one tweet or sentence or something, you can tell, I'm seeing if I can find an example, but you can tell if some credibility by how accurate, if somebody's says the Gilboa Dam is blowing or is overflowing, and they say it's located at a place you know it's not located at, then that first part of that information becomes very doubtful. If the second part, if there's something else in it that's incorrect, then mm-hmm. you almost like, well, I'm basically going to ignore this until I see much more backup, because that does not sound like a reliable source. And then I think through the course of the weekend, you also developed who was reliable sources. Mm-hmm. So if you, maybe it was the first time Don Meltz, and he may be the GPS guy, mm-hmm. Posted, I wouldn't take it as very seriously, but if he had been posting for hours information that turned out to be consistently correct, mm-hmm. then his information moved way up the charts in terms of credibility. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think Don Meltz, that name sounds familiar. But he was later on, the GPS guy. This is, I'm still on Sunday, so it probably wasn't him, but.
All right, so I'll give you the answer. That is the GPS guy.
Oh, it is. Okay. Yeah. So I got it.
So you get points for that. So it really only takes, it just takes people several times of you being able to kind of verify the information in some way for somebody to become a source.
Yeah. Doran Tyler Antrim, he's from the Daily Mail.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think he writes for the Daily Mail anymore. But he did participate. He was the one force from that scene that did participate in the live blog,
mm-hmm.
A little bit. So if he's working for a different newspaper, it might be interesting to call him and get his perspective on, I don't know if he's willing to talk, but he used to cover Cairo and Catskill.
Okay. You had, of course, I mean, GXC is a collaborative project, and you have all these volunteers running around, like Philip Grant, who is making the emergency warning recordings beforehand with the FEMA information and state information from Albany, and you had that sort of thing happening. But what, and you, I guess, could we call this a did you post the live blog? If I went to the WGXC site, I'd be,
yeah, we had this, we had this up on the site. We had this on the front page of WGXC.org for a time. Uh-huh. This blog was on, but it was at the top of the newsroom blog the entire time of the storm. We had it at the top of the page. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. Does that constitute a collaboration?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. No, we were definitely collaborating, and we were talking about how, like, yeah, they put this up, and I remember I sent Lisa or Julia an email, I guess before that 852 post, I sent them an email saying like, oh, we want to do whatever. And like, yeah, I can look up the email probably.
Were there any other, like kind of institutional collaborations that you were trying to make, or did make?
That's a good question. I was trying to think of what they were. While I think of that, there's a couple WGXC people that you might want to talk to that, like mm-hmm. you said, Philip Joan did something, for sure. And Forbes Cooper definitely did something. I think of anybody else, but institutionally, let's see. Julia's the managing editor.
I'm not sure.
Or is it Lissa? Who did you talk to?
Facebooked Lissa, and she just responded to me today.
Watershed Post, maybe. Is that one that I should? I want, like, 9/10/22/11. Wait, here we go. There's none before 9/2.
Well, it's actually the date would have been
8/26, right? Or 8/27?
I'm pulling up my calendar, but I'm pretty sure the 28th was the Sunday that we started flooding, but I'm just pulling that up. August 2011. Saturday was the 27th. Sunday was the 28th of August.
Okay, so it wasn't Julia. I didn't have any Julia emails at that time. There's a watershed post. It's probably this address.
Yeah, and I actually I didn't see any, interestingly enough, I didn't see like their information on the watershed post when I was trying to contact them. So that's why I went through Facebook.
Here, this is 8/28, is that what you said?
Yeah, August 28th, Sunday, August 28th was the day that we started to flood here.
So this is Philip. I'll send you updates. It's like him sending me the MP3.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and he sent me it was silent, and then he's resending it. Great, we got it on the air a minute ago at 11 at night. I thought one of these had watershed post. Why am I in here? Oh.
Storm update, maybe.
8/28, where is it? Yeah, oh, I just quoted the watershed post. It's not too... Okay, here's the 8/30. So I don't see... Let's see. It could be just the Julia. Oh, 8/27. Yeah, here. I'm trying to get him to call in. What if the power goes out?
So that was on Saturday?
The 27th. So we were trying to get them on the air that night. Yeah, I remember trying to get some guests that night during the storm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So So even on the 27th, you were trying to interview people and stuff. Okay.
Who else? Yeah, the institutionally, the TV stations didn't really participate at all. What other institutions are there?
What about WRIP?
Oh, yeah, WRIP in Windham. Yeah, I'm totally forgetting them. Yeah. I believe they posted to this. I haven't seen it, or I would have noticed it, but they had the best information because they were right there. The Greene County legislator had bought them a backup generator or helped give them a grant toward a backup generator a couple years ago. So they were able to stay on the air the entire time. And their studio is right in the, a quarter of a mile away from every walking distance of everything in Windham, from the emergency center, from right where all the damage was, the high school, you know, all that. So they had the best information because they were on ground zero for at least Windham. And they were the closest to Prattsville, so they had the best Prattsville information. They were the main, in terms of the radio, they were certainly the main radio station. And at one point, on the first day, on the Tuesday, I think, on the afternoon show, we all were broadcasting the same thing, us and maybe even the Roxbury station. So we collaborated with the RIP, at least on the first day, broadcasting something simultaneously.
What was the broadcast?
It was like a live interview with the emergency management. It was like some big announcement of whatever the pressing news was at that moment. But yes, they posted information. We would repost whatever they had and... they had some of the best information. Yeah.
And what about with WIOX in Roxbury? Were you collaborating?
We were to some extent, and they would post, I don't think they have a news team, then or now, in an organized way to, produce information. So I'm not sure how they were producing it. And if it was just like, somebody would tell them something and they would write it down on a piece of paper and just announce it in the studio, but it wasn't like also posted online or organized nearly as accessibly.
Was there any other institutional collaborations? that were happening, or
trying to think, and I'm looking through. You know, the any chance we found that government had a useful Twitter feed or a useful like social media tool that we could link to, and when I say we, I mean all the different mm-hmm. groups, we would use that. Like if they made a widget that told you how high the water was, you know, or something, we would all have put that on our websites so that everyone could, you know, see that information. So I don't think there was a lot of that. I'm just trying to stretch and think, but I'm sure there was a little bit of it. So that was kind of an institutional collaboration, I guess. Mm-hmm. If I can even think of an example, maybe at the state level, there was something like that.
Well, I just saw, as you're flicking through, that FEMA, there's FEMA.
Right. I saw that FEMA too. So that's the kind of, mm-hmm. so FEMA would have its own social media network or Twitter feeds. That we basically, but that's more of the people like the Watershed Post cracking in there and like realizing, oh, we should subscribe to that. Right. And then I think FEMA like outreaching to do that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they set it up and that's outreach enough, kind of, you can find it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But like the National Weather Service has many kind of things like that. You can go to their pages and insert, you know, radar images or groundwater levels or, you know, things uh-huh. like that.
Uh-huh. So did you use any of the National Weather Service widgets or anything like that at that time? Or
I definitely remember, you know, I probably had like, you know, there's five tabs open. Mm-hmm. There was a page at the time, and one of them was always like the National Weather Service alerts or that page was one of the live blog was in a tab by itself. The depending on what the story, you know, the news, we have a news email address. So we were getting press releases coming in constantly. So that was always open. The Twitter page was always up. The Facebook page, because that's where you really got the random people. You know, not everybody in Greene County has a Twitter feed, but a good majority of Greene County people have a Facebook page and mm-hmm. know how to post like pictures of their granddaughters. And so because they know how to post pictures of their granddaughters, when there's a truck floating by, they know how to post that picture now. And so we uh-huh. were getting pictures. That goes back to the Facebook, more than the live blog or the Twitter feed that we were talking about. Facebook was really the way non-professional journalists interacted. Mm-hmm. And not in a sense that they were feeding it. Like this, you've got a sense that you're feeding into a journalistic enterprise. In Facebook, you're just posting to your friends like what's going on, mm-hmm. but that became journalism because it was just raw information about what that photo of uh-huh. Prattsville was very telling at that point.
Right.
Or a photo of a bridge out. If the question was whether the bridge was open or not, and someone's posted a photo with running water where the bridge should be, then it was clear that it was out. So Facebook people answered lots of questions. Even without maybe intending it to be that kind of result.
Uh-huh. So did you were getting information, so you were looking at Facebook as a source.
Definitely the Sunday, when the rain stopped,
yeah.
I think everybody was looking at Facebook. All those pictures like this of Prattsville and Windham and Hunter, there were all those pictures with cars floating by. I just remember that first day, Facebook was absolutely the best information. That there was more Facebook photos of what had happened, because like we were here and it rained a lot, sure, we lost our power, but that kind of thing happens all the time,
right?
So but we didn't, you couldn't tell that was going on somewhere else.
Yeah.
There was no way to know, because after the storm it was like this, everything was all wet and some trees were down, but we didn't. You wouldn't think to look around that was down the road.
No. Well, I'll break protocol here and say that was definitely the case for me. I have the same experience. The power goes out all the time. I flood all the time, and so it was on Facebook that I saw, like, Karen Schomer had a picture of you know, down on the plains, or maybe Sam had a picture of, wow, it's flooding here, it's flooding there. There was also the YNN, I think it was.
Yeah.
I was following them on Facebook because that was, I didn't have any other.
YNN has more, of all those TV networks in Albany, they'd have more social media and more,
So, because it was the first time my phone went out. So the only thing I had until my, eventually my electric went too, but Facebook was the only like information source that I had at one point. And that's also how I found out how to get off the mountain, which was there was a path.
There was only one way, right?
There was only one way, and so that was through Facebook. So I definitely had that experience too.
Definitely that Sunday, I think Facebook was the, and then probably Monday, WRIP kind of took over as the central focus.
Yeah.
With the live blog. Well, the live blog was always better than WRIP because the live blog had WRIP plus everything else. So,
So now that you flicked through a lot, is there anybody else that you see on there that really stood out to you as a good source? Because you've done a lot of flicking through now.
Yeah. Well, I'm still early on and I really remember this more, not as much the first couple hours as like, because it stayed live for 2 weeks, I think, didn't it? I think they kept it for almost 2 weeks.
It was continuously live for 10 days.
10 days, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and after the first couple days, people took turns being monitors.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, yes.
So you were following this a lot more in the days following, you kept looking at this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, by the Tuesday, that's when we really needed, that's when we were like full time, like any information we have that we can pass along, because we were back on the air.
So from then on until when did you stop?
I don't know. We were pretty full time. I mean, I'm seeing how often I'm posting on, this is like the Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm not. I'll probably see other people that I became figures, but or that I remember. That's the question, right? I'm trying to. I don't have any other names right now, but
So there's this period. There's an emergency period. There's the pre coverage period, and at that time, where are the sources that you're using for the pre storm period? You said National Weather Service. Was that your source then, or
basically,
yeah.
Beforehand, there wasn't. I wish we would have known that the ground was that soaked and we've been reporting that. We did talk to the emergency management guy from Greene County, and that was it.
Okay. And then you had this kind of period when you weren't on the air, but you were participating in the social media. There's like a period of emergency, and it sounds like the kind of things that you're trying to share at that point is, like you said, squelching rumors. And what other kinds of information did people, were
roads,
people looking?
How, you know, like you were saying about getting, there was only one way off the mountain. There was only one way to get into Prattsville, or there was, you know, so the road closings, it all happened. And then the roads were not even closed yet, but they were impassable. So at first it was just like figuring out, everybody was just trying to figure out where the problems were. And I'm sure the county and everybody and the officials were at the same time. And then it was like, how do you get around? So, we reported road closings, or reopenings for like 6 months. I think we would, have reports about, oh, they finally opened 23A. That happened like a couple months later, didn't it? Or there were a couple openings that
I wasn't here when it opened.
I think that I remember reporting that like a couple months later on 23A so that went on for a long time, but.
So there's this period where you're just trying to figure out where the problems are, and how long does that period last?
I think the Sunday, everybody is like looking at Facebook and like, wow. And then the Monday, everyone is like, what does this all mean? And then Tuesday, it's starting to, okay, this is the horriblest, the worst thing. Tuesday probably is when the CNNs of the world arrive.
Mm-hmm.
Prattsville got its CNN story probably on the Tuesday, I think, but I'm not sure. I would look that up, but the national media descended on Prattsville once they realized what horrific, that the whole town got wiped out, basically. And I think if you talk to Prattsville, I always heard that the Prattsville had like this big problem with the national media coming in, and they've just like, everybody was gawking at them and they were at their worst and they needed help. And I don't know. That's one of the things I want to talk to people in Prattsville about. If the media was useful or getting in the way or, you know.
Yeah, that would be good to know. Well, I don't know if you can confirm this or deny this, but Paul Smart told me that at first the National Guard wasn't allowing any media to go up there. And then he said that they allowed the national media in and not the local media. Do you know any? Can you confirm that?
That seems to be the way that I can't confirm it. But I think he tried to get through, and they told him not. They couldn't get through. Mm-hmm. And at about the same time, the national media clearly got through somehow. So that's what it looks like. Yes. Now you should talk to Terry Doyle too. I forgot. There's another good name. He's at WRIP. He does that imprint show. And he was in Prattsville the day for that, I think, Cuomo press conference that I think was that week. And I think that's a day or two after the national media thing, but it might be the exact same time. But we aired a clip, an interview with, he had Pete Lopez,
uh-huh.
break down in tears because his house and his grandmother's house and like, maybe not his house, but his like grandmother's house got destroyed, and he had like personal family that got wiped out in the storm. And we have a clip somewhere. I remember playing it several times of Lopez just like starting to cry in the middle of this public ceremony.
And
who's
Pete Lopez?
The New York State Assemblyman that covers. He's in Schoharie County as his base, but he covers Greene County too.
Greene County, yeah. So he did. I don't know. And they were districted.
I think he still covers parts of it at least. But he definitely still covers Schoharie.
Okay. So he was, that's through WIOX.
Right. So Terry Doyle may confirm or deny that report. If he was there at the same time that the local media, I mean, the national media was there, maybe it's because he was coming from Delaware County side,
right,
where the Greene County side was much tougher probably to get in that way. It was probably much easier, to get into Prattsville from the other side because there was probably a lot fewer people coming from that direction.
Yeah, and, you know, I would think so.
If you're in the national media, you're coming from the Greene County, you know, you're coming up I-87.
Yeah, definitely. So there's that, you just described that period as, there's kind of the pre-storm coverage, and then there's, figuring out where the problems were. And you said that was kind of Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Oh, and then I just see on then it rained again. Was it a Thursday I think there was rain later that week or the second storm?
Hurricane Lee.
Yeah, the second storm was, how many days later was that? Seven?
You know, I was so overwhelmed with my own problems at that point that I don't remember when Hurricane Lee happened.
But so you're breaking into stages. I'm just trying to think through it too. But that is a whole different stage. It's like, oh, there's another storm coming.
Right.
And then it's hitting us, and then it's and that affected. It was much worse to the west and the southwest in the state, like Binghamton and all got hit worse. But Schoharie and Prattsville did get hit pretty bad again, but not Schoharie. I think much worse.
I don't have internet, so I can't look it up.
I can give you the password.
When they came through.
You can get internet if you want. There's the password.
Well, I guess it's not that important. We can look it up later too. So. Yeah, so it rained again. Lee comes through, and people are there's a part of like freaking out about whether that storm is going to be like as intense, and it turned out that it was as intense a flooding event. Just and some places got hit twice. Some people flooded twice, right? In the so, and did that happen? Did Lee actually do flood damage here in Greene County, or
the second storm? Mm-hmm. I don't think. I'm sure it probably did somewhere, but I don't remember. It definitely Schoharie County got hit bad, and then mm-hmm. Delaware County, and then towards Binghamton.
Yeah.
But I don't think Greene got nearly as bad.
Right. So, you had this period where you're trying to figure out where the problems are, and this other storm comes up, and then I guess you're probably back in the pre-storm coverage while you're trying to do the assessment, so there's kind of some overlap there. What comes after the figuring out the problems, where the problems are? What happens after that?
I guess we were trying to get experts in, like, to talk about what it means mm-hmm. to agriculture. You know, I think somebody within a week or so had something about building on a floodplain, or, you know, that kind of talk was going on. I think we had some somebody from the Agroforestry Center or some geologist talking about trying to put it in historic context. Yes. So I guess it was those kind of stories were the next mm-hmm. part.
Those sound like pretty big picture.
Yeah, it got wider as the time went on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how long did that period? How long were you in the figuring out where the problems were stage? You said Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Did it go beyond that, or?
I want to look up the. How do I do this by time? Oh yeah, their date's good. Oh no, this is what I want. Yes, you can keep. I can. Oh,
right.
What's the question?
I didn't take a picture. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to figure out the arc of coverage of the arc of trying to map out what kinds of public information are flowing at different phases. From I'd like to know from before the storm through to today.
Quicker this way.
So what are the, you know, where are the natural breaks and the kind of information that people are trying to share and what they're sharing?
Okay, here we are in August. So we go down to August 9th, it cuts off, or it's not loaded yet. Oops, August 1st. I don't want August 1st. I want older. Oh, okay. So it's at the top. Okay, Cuomo in Prattsville. That's the thing I was talking to you about. Mm-hmm. What day is that? That's August 31st.
Okay.
So let's go back to August 28th here. Wednesday, Thursday. Okay. Hurricane Irene, the first item. Oh, we did have a couple items during the week. I think maybe there was another one.
The
earthquake.
The couple of items. What was the first date?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. The Virginia earthquake was also that week.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Jeez. Yeah, it was archaeology camp, and I didn't feel a thing. I was at Co Green.
We were all sure that it was the end of the world. The earthquakes and hurricanes. Yes, I remember that's we right. were making those
that's
jokes.
Right.
Okay, so the first one looks like it's on the Thursday. Hurricane Irene approaches New York. The latest National Weather Service computer model for Hurricane Irene's path has the storm headed, I think there was one before that, headed just east of our area this Sunday evening. The prediction has the storm still at hurricane strength when it gets parallel and probably east of our area Sunday evening. Yeah, I think there was one more previous. There was a, who'd quarantined? Virginia, oh yeah, hurricane, Tuesday. So Tuesday the 23rd. Several computer forecast models predict that Hurricane Irene, now a Category 2 storm bearing down on the Bahamas, might bring wind and rain to our area this weekend. The Albany National Weather Service forecast for this Sunday and Monday includes the possibility of a lot of rain for our region. Hurricane behavior is difficult to predict this far in advance, but Irene is expected to strengthen to a Category 3 storm and skirt the southeastern U.S. in the next few days. So that is on Tuesday. And then Thursday we had that update that it is still headed our way. And then Friday, Hurricane Irene causes state of emergency. New York has declared a state of emergency ahead of the predicted arrival of Hurricane Irene in our area Sunday. See the more link at the bottom of the century for the complete list of what the state of New York is doing now in preparation for the hurricane. And then that afternoon, we have the Greene County Emergency Management guy on, John Farrell. Here's the link. Director of Greene County Emergency Services talks about Greene County's preparations for Hurricane Irene. And so this is August 26th. Is that the Saturday or the Friday?
The 26th is...
The Friday, the 26th, right? It's the 28th was the Sunday.
Yeah.
So Friday, the 26th. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we had the John Farrell clip up, and also we had Cuomo giving a press conference about state plans for the hurricane. Mm-hmm.
That's a video
feed. It's a video feed from the governor, the governor's webpage. That the videos are okay. So then we have.
You've got a weather map there of the storm from National.
Well, then this is the earthquake. There were two New York earthquakes. Oh, that's right. Two tiny earthquakes up by Altamont.
Uh-huh.
At the same, oh, and around the Gilboa Dam. That's right. There was an earthquake around the Gilboa Dam, like the day before the storm.
Yeah. Oh, that's so freaky.
Okay. Whoops. It moved. Yeah, I totally forgot about the earthquakes. Okay. So we go back where we were on. Oh no! Now we're way off.
How are we doing on time? Are you okay?
Oh yeah, I'm fine. At 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock, I need to get a couple files together.
Okay.
Okay. Here we are. We're back here. Okay. So, and then this is August 30th. How did we miss? August 27th. Okay, so August 27th and it was the storm. I bet all we had up was the live blog, and we kept moving it.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the information was in there, and we just put up the webcams, too, so you could go and look at what Hunter Mountain looked like from their webcam and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, I think all our coverage was the first day or two was just the live blog. We were just collaborating on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this on the 30th, we report about the two other earthquakes, and then we're reporting about the Red Cross needs all this help. The local governments are asking for this. State agencies are asking for this. Libraries are want help in recovering their collections. Flood recovery from Cornell, you know, like it's just all resources and what the topic is and where the information is. Central Hudson, road closures in Albany County. We had road closures by county. Columbia County shelters, Catskill shelters. There's a quote from you there. State emergency, dry ice distribution. That's what was going on in Cano Park. And then we were linking to WRIP and the Watershed Post live blog and giving RIP's number on the 30th. 30th was the day we got on the air, I guess, again for the first time. And then every day it was basically the latest storm recovery information and what that day's information was. And yes, that day Gillenbrand and Gibson were in Catskill, and I recorded them at the corner where Coney Island Ice Cream and all those businesses got wiped out. They toured all those businesses and we walked around with them that morning. We didn't get to this meeting. This Catskill High School had an informational meeting for everybody. I remember that. That's the Cuomo in Prattsville. So it was that Wednesday. We don't have it here, but it was when I think he was on the Watershed Post show. September. That Saturday they had a Coney Island benefit. We had a picture of that. There's the live blog. I guess that's where it ended up. We probably stopped on the 3rd or something with it. And then Monday the 6th, I guess we're going back to normal. We're still reporting flood stuff. There's pictures. There's audio. There's storm information by town. We had fundraising. Almost every day we reported some fundraiser. That was going on. That there was constant fundraisers or donations. People needed specific things. And then all the different businesses, we would start Big Top Rentals. We interviewed them because they became a location where you could drop off stuff. And that all these different businesses did that. So we had a list of all the different places you could take things around town. Kara, the Slaters, had a $10,000 matching donation. We interviewed him. We interviewed several of these businesses. There were boil water advisories. We were reporting all that stuff all the time. Important news, yeah. So each day it was something different. There was still a curfew for Wyndham, all that kind of stuff. The transfer stations were closed. They were reopening. Hunter's Tannerville schools will reopen on the September 8th. And whatever video we could find was always good. And then Tropical Storm Lee was like 2 weeks later. It was September 6th. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. First, okay, so Sunday and Monday there were rains, not the storm. It rained hard, and that was a big story. And then Wednesday and Thursday is when Lee came the following week.
So there's two, like, I'd like to try to nail out just for however, we can, to just flesh out what the arc of the coverage and the information, like, just nail down how you see the phases of coverage and roughly how long they lasted. So in your own words, you talked about we talked about pre-storm coverage. We talked about figure out where the problems are phase of things.
I guess there was a little tiny during storm coverage that wasn't really that important.
Okay, during storm coverage. Okay.
But I don't think that was really very important. I think people just hunkered down and like, okay, we're hunkering down. When the storm ended, that was when people, I feel like, really were searching for information.
Yeah, right. That's right. So that's probably true.
But during the storm, some people may have tuned in. We were giving out live reports. People may have been watching TV, the Weather Channel, mm-hmm. and watching the radar live and stuff.
Right. And then what comes after where the problems are? I mean, how do you describe that phase? What's next then in your mind?
The long term, is that your kind of coverage?
Long term.
What you mean?
I don't know. It's
The problems that associated with the storm are such enormous, say for Prattsville, where, I'm not exactly sure what percentage of the population left town, but a healthy percentage of the population has left town because their house was destroyed or there's not the infrastructure there was. That's a major long-term story that the Zadok Pratt Museum got, almost completely destroyed as a major chunk of history that, almost got erased. We've talked to Bob Titus about the course of rivers being changed and those are kind of long-term
right.
and again, about rebuilding on the floodplain and things like that. So I think we've been doing that phase ever since and kind of, I think we kind of treat Prattsville with like kid gloves and we like want to do, give it as much coverage as it can and attention and help, just cause it seems so, just so decimated by the whole. And it was a remote part of Greene County that got very little media coverage to begin with. I don't know what newspaper serves Prattsville. I'm not sure if the Mountain Eagle is, I guess maybe the one newspaper that serves Prattsville before this storm, I'd ask the residents there, when was the last time you saw a TV truck, a TV crew mm-hmm. in Prattsville? And I just don't know what the answer would, be. It's a area that is, there is very little media directed at Prattsville.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is that a problem that there's not coverage for?
I think we have kind of compensated in the other way after the storm in terms of, like, I think Pretzel now gets proportionally more coverage than it would if it hadn't been. I mean, the storm obviously means more news things happen or happened, mm-hmm. but I think we go out of our way kind of to give it more attention to, because it needs, it just needs it. And it's the biggest story I'm sure that's hit the Greene County in ever since I've been here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in your mind, are there any loose ends in terms of the kinds of information that people need?
I think the big picture is the emergency management officials did not, I think the social media did a better job of disseminating information in this storm during that week than the emergency management officials did. They don't have Twitter feeds. They don't have Facebook pages. There are some exceptions, but to a large extent, I don't think the Schoharie Office of Emergency Management has a Facebook page or a Twitter feed. I don't think the Greene County Office of Emergency Management has a Facebook page or a Twitter feed. Columbia County does have a Facebook page. They don't have a Twitter feed. Their Facebook page, they were faced with an emergency last week, this TCI chemical fire, and they have been criticized for being slow on the information distribution on that issue. So I think that emergency management officials could do a better job of disseminating information quickly than they do currently, because they have more tools at their command than they actually use.
Have they changed their practices at all since the storm? Do you know, or is it easier to get information out of them now, or do they have any new resources that have come?
I haven't seen any changes. That doesn't necessarily mean that there aren't any changes, but
okay.
But there hasn't been a major catastrophe in Greene County. This Columbia County thing is the only, and it's not similar at all, but it's the only similar in scale that it was a large major catastrophe where there was a lot of need or want from the public for information. So it's only similar in that sense. But I haven't noticed any changes.
So one loose end for you is the way that just the public information in the county is flowing from the officials about emergencies. That's a loose end in your book.
Yes.
Is there any other loose ends, do you think, in terms of things that linger in terms of what the public needs to know about Irene or Inley or other related events?
No, I think that I don't know. There may be, but you know, the weather is to some extent is beyond anyone's control. So I don't know what can be done about there being other storms. Mm-hmm. But the government can do its best it can to spread that information. I think maybe I think the other maybe loose end is that the broadband in the rural areas up here. You know, there is not widespread, but there was a lot of people that did have a little, at least a little bit of internet to do something. Clearly there could be more.
Okay. So I think I have all the questions that I have for you. There's a little census of, I just want to know what kind of tools you are using. So we'll just quickly run through what those tools are that you're, in case we missed any of them. So you used Facebook, and that was the WGXC Facebook, your personal one or both?
No, I use my personal one mostly.
Okay.
My personal one, I've subscribed to a whole bunch of local institutions and
okay.
groups and such.
Okay. And you used, you were using, were you posting, you were reading and posting on Facebook?
So I wasn't posting on Facebook. I was looking, yeah.
Looking, not posting. Okay. And then with Twitter, that was the WGXC account that we were tweeting with?
Yes.
Okay. And you were both...
watching it, too.
You were both monitoring Twitter and...
sending out tweets, yes.
And tweeting, okay. And then they were, you were using the WGXC news blog and website. Was there any other blogs that you... was there any other places that you were posting on the web besides the live blog and the...
I don't think so. I mean, besides the WGXC newsroom, no, I don't think so.
Okay. And you mentioned that you were looking at the National Weather Service, Facebook.
Our news email address.
News email address.
And I was probably looking at the... well, the Daily Freeman, I wouldn't have to look. I mean, they would tweet if they updated anything. Mm-hmm. So I would just watch the Twitter feed. So,
okay.
We probably had some of the TV, local TVs on at the time too, because they were doing stories about Greene County. I mean, they were doing stories about the whole area. So,
do you remember which ones?
No, like I think, like you said, YNN seems to be the best, definitely with social media and with more farther out of Albany and Troy stories.
Okay, so that it would have been the Albany stations you were looking
at? Yeah, the Albany stations, okay. Yes.
And then you were, was there any other websites that you haven't mentioned that you were looking at?
I feel like there must have been, but I don't remember.
Okay, that's fine. Landline, do you use a landline to share information or get information?
I'm a little bit at the time, but mostly my cell phone, but I would say a landline a little bit too, yeah.
Mostly your cell phone. And that's
the landline, definitely when we're at the Hudson Studio, is used a lot more.
Okay. Okay. So at the studio, you were using it a lot. Okay.
Because we have a better interface there.
Mm-hmm. Computers, how many computers were you using to share information or get information?
I generally use two, like the setup now, my laptop, and then the big computer. I'll often have one kind of task going on one and then another kind going on another.
Okay. And then were you listening to any AM radio?
AM, no. No, we definitely were monitoring WRIP and Wyndham, though.
Mm-hmm.
And but more often, I often will use my phone and listen to the internet stream. I was listening to both RIP and in the Roxbury station and the Wyndham stations.
Mm-hmm. There's a Wyndham station?
Wyndham, RIP is in Wyndham.
Oh, the Wyndham station, yeah, okay.
The commercial station is Wyndham RIP. The LPFM, or...
sorry.
They're not LPFM, the full power station is Roxbury, yeah.
IOX, yeah. So, okay, and those were both on... You're listening to, in both cases, they were mostly streams
through
on your
stream,
phone.
Yeah.
Stream on your iPhone. Okay. Do you listen to any emergency service radio?
Were you monitoring? I have the scanners on my phone too, yeah.
The scanners on your phone. Okay. And were you getting information from that at that time?
To some extent. That's it's hard to suss out, but sometimes you can figure out there's something going on and then you look elsewhere. I mean, that's generally in this case, you would find out something and then you'd have to find out more, or you'd have to confirm it, or you need a second source on almost everything. Cause I mean, depending on what it was, but
right.
I'm sure that even the emergency officials gave out incorrect information at different points.
Sure. Maps, were you using any kind of mapping tools?
Just the one, I would look at the Google Docs that, or the Google Maps and Google Docs that the Watershed Posts set up. They set up some Google Docs that we haven't talked about that you're probably getting to, like with the fundraising information. So once a fundraiser was vetted and everyone was sure that it was legitimate, it was put into this database that everyone shared.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So So there was the Google Docs, and then there was Google Maps that they were looking at. Were those Don Meltz's maps that you were looking at?
I assume so, yeah.
Okay. And the newspapers, we already talked about them. The Freeman, the Daily Mail. You mentioned the Mountain Eagle. Do you follow
the it's one of the Daily Mail Register Star papers. So I do look the Mountain Eagle and the Wyndham Journal and the Greene County News and the Chatham Courier, the other papers, a little bit, but not as much. Yeah,
just all through their website, the one website? Is that how you do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any other papers that we didn't talk about?
The Greenville Mountain View Pioneer does not have a website.
Uh-huh.
It's a print-only edition. And so there were some Greenville stories in there, I'm sure. Uh-huh.
And you get that in print? You watch that?
In print, yes. Yeah, that's the only way I know about okay. They have a website that's just a one-page static,
Okay.
Dynamic.
But you were looking at trying to get information.
The hard copy. Their hard copy. We look at that all the time because they have some. They cover. I think they're the only paper that covers southern Albany County.
Oh, okay.
They cover like Medusa and Rensselaerville, and mm-hmm. the Daily Mail's papers don't really cover those towns at all.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Is there any other newspapers that you that we haven't talked about that you were looking at for information about this?
There were some other blogs, I don't think newspapers. I mean, the Times Union certainly has good stories, and you know they're more Albany centric, but there's certainly sometimes stories in the Times Union. But the blogs, there was one little item from Dick May, Seeing Green. You know, there's probably some other blogs that had. Small stories or mm-hmm. something that we'd link to or something.
Okay. And did anything else come to mind that you were using to either share information or get information?
Not that I can think of. I'm sure that we're leaving things out, but.
Well, that's a lot. Sounds like a lot of stuff. All right. So I think I'm done with the actual interview, unless there's anything that you want to add that you think is important that we haven't covered.
I'm sure I can't. I'll think of some other things. I'd like to look at those Google documents. I don't know how to get to that, but at some point I'll look at those. I'm going to start doing this for WGXC. We're trying to put together pieces now from a year ago, or find the audio pieces and then try to tell a story from what audio we have or what audio we can other people we can ask. About kind of what's happened in a year or where things are and what it all means at this point.
Cool. Well, the next thing I wanted to do with you is tell you who I was going to interview and stuff. So I thought we'd stop the formal interview and get into that. And
you want me to stop recording?
Well, that's up to you. But I think I'm done with what I think I got what I needed.
Well, I'll stop. So, I'm just going to give this to you.